The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's January the 30th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons here in Champaign County. Well, in agricultural news, there's word on the Hill another round of mandatory spending cuts is coming to the federal government, including a hit for agriculture. That's the bad news for farmers. On the other side of the coin, and I mean that literally, it looks like a disaster aid package is in the works that could include money for farmers in the Midwest. Maybe. Possibly. Well, it could just be talk. A bit like that, the scuttlebutt on President Bush's FY07 budget proposal to be delivered the second week of February. It may well include a smaller cap on farm payments. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in this half hour. Speaking of farm payments, let's switch to crop insurance and the RMA. Those decisions need to be made by March the 15th. The FarmDoc website has some good estimates of the final figures, which won't be released for another month. We'll report today on the thing your agent might be whispering in your ear. Usually, you know, the government crop insurance program premiums cost the same no matter who you get them from. This year, 9 companies will offer a discount. Again, there's a big maybe here. We'll tell you more about that later. And take up the agriculture weather forecast today with the folks at Chesapeake Energy. It all happens in this Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March wheat, 3.45 1/4. Up a penny and 3/4 today. May futures at 3.56, up 1 1/4. March wheat from the Kansas City Board of Trade settled at 3.98 1/4. It was up 4.5 cents for the day. From the corn pit, March contract at 2.17 3/4, down 1. The May at 2.27 3/4, off 3/4. And July wheat at 2.36 1/2, down 1 for the day. September futures, 2.43 3/4. They were off 3/4 cents. Soy complex now, March contract 5.98 3/4. Up 9.5 cents. May futures at 6.09 1/2, up 9 3/4. And July wheat at 6.20 1/4. It finished 10 3/4 higher. November beans 6.30 3/4, up 9 3/4. Bean meal March contract 188.20, up 180. March bean oil at 22.20, up 15 for the day. March feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange at $109.75, down 87.5. February live cattle at $93.25, were off 65. And the Fettlein hogs at $56.75 were down 17.5 cents for the day.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Kurt Kimmel called away from his office this afternoon. Pete Manhart filling in for him today. Thanks, Pete, for filling in. We appreciate you being on the line with us.
Thanks.
Tell me about this trade in Chicago, especially about the beans, which have rallied 2 days in a row. But if I read things right, it appears that not closing above $6 today was not the best of signs, despite the fact they're up, I think, maybe 25, 26 cents over the last 2 days.
Right, and we did close the front month at 5.98 3/4, up 9.5. We couldn't get as high as last night's overnight trade, but we did trade up 2 days in a row. Fund buying and people worried about South American weather, especially dryness in Argentina. And from everything we heard at noon, there was big battles going on between those weathermen of some saying up 1 to 4 inches, others saying none whatsoever. So a big argument about whether it's going to rain in Argentina or not. And that held the beans from going higher. Fundamentally, we're way above where we would expect. Lots of people are saying we could see them back down, but funds have kept them going higher and higher. And corn also, I mean, today we did close down 1/4 to a penny to whatever, but corn did make new highs above the last time we were up on the corn.
Yeah, in fact, they made a high in the nearby March contract at 222. Everybody was hoping that they'd get through 221, which I think was a resistance level. Closed below that, down 4 cents from that, but off a penny for the day at 217 and three quarters. As you look longer term in the marketplace from now until maybe early spring, I suppose, what do you see happening?
Well, I see continuing to have bounces in the beans both directions. I'd be looking at selling old crop on bounces and also getting new crop started and selling a new crop over $6. In places, I'm sure it got to over $6 today, but I would be doing that on the beans. On corn, I'd be waiting, thinking that corn is more of a grinded-out upward momentum, and I can see it being another 10, 15 higher down the road.
Did you happen to hear the conversation we had from Commodity Week this past weekend about the number of dollars that were available after post 9/11 and the potential that there are so many dollars still available in the marketplace that could simply drive the price of commodities higher, even if fundamentally it doesn't look like they ought to go higher?
Right. Those numbers are huge. Fundamentals, the meetings I've been to lately with Mr. Hightower and Mr. Fried, they said you might throw my fundamentals out the window this year. Part of the time, because funds are going to look at corn as an energy, and they will come in to buy it. And the index funds, when they buy something, pay the entire amount. They don't pay a $700 fee or a $250 fee. They pay 5,000 bushel times 250 a bushel, and if it goes down, it doesn't matter. So they're looking to hold those things for down the road until energy is even higher priced and more corn will be turned into energy.
Yeah, I had a question about that. When the funds come in and they buy, and I know this difference from index fund to index fund or just funds in general, do they buy, when they're buying for the long term, do they buy the forest deferred, or are they buying December contract, or do they generally buy the nearbys and roll? How does that happen?
Well, I think every fund is different, but the index funds that only buy are looking for long term, and they will buy right now. They're rolling out of their March, buying May and July. And they will then in another quarter roll out of those and go further out. So instead of buying far out, they're buying fairly close nearby and then rolling, and they're willing to do that for 2 to 3 years and hold on to something that they think is cheap.
Well, that's and are we? I know we follow that in the Goldman Sachs. Are we able to and it shows up from the Mercantile Exchange? Can we see that happen at the board as well?
It did at the end of December. We saw December. When we had to get out of old 5 December corn, when we had to get out of January beans before the January entry date, you could see that the January contract was being pushed down. The spread was different than it had been on the March. So they were getting out of the January and going into the March. It did cause a 2 or 3 cent difference in the normal spread.
And I suppose as a day trader, there's a way to take advantage of that. Is there anything to worry about that?
Yeah, for 2 or 3 cents, I don't know if you can be that good a day trader.
I seem to recall day trading's a dangerous job.
Yes, it is. Okay. Now, when you have a 30-cent range, maybe you can take 6 cents out of the middle, but trying to take 6 cents out of a 10-cent range is, I don't know that very many people are successful at it.
What have you been hearing from all across your clientele in the Midwest and other places about acreage and what their expectations are?
We're hearing everything on acreage. I've had guys say, when it really gets down to it and we push the pencil, we might plant a few more beans. And I've other guys saying, hey, if I can grow 180 bushel corn and lock in 250 price plus a 40-cent LDP, I'm better off even with these higher prices planting more corn. So we've got it all over the board here right in the Midwest. I think the big changes will come in the fringe areas, in the irrigated areas. You get out west in irrigated areas, it's the amount to pump water up is just tremendous, and they just can't afford to do it.
Hey, are you fearful at all that the LDP will be gone? And I know that there's sort of one thing that says, well, if the LDP gone is not there, then things have got to be better than they were last fall. But my thinking is, as we talked about these dollars being available, it's costing so much for the inputs. How might farmers think about, I guess they need to think about profit margins or margins rather than
we need to talk about
price.
Dollars per acre of income instead of a price per bushel. If I've got 180 bushel times 250, how much is that per acre? Just like they now look at insurance per acre. Well, how many bushels? You know, we look at cost per acre when we're putting it in. We need to look at dollars per acre when we're taking it out. So I think that's something new. Instead of saying, well, that's going to cost me X amount per bushel, we need to look at X amount per acre.
Tell me about the mercantile exchange for the day.
The Merc today, cattle continued on down, and were down near their lows at the end of the day. We think that cattle ought to be within a dollar of a low. Hogs turned around and maybe are trying to find a low. We were actually up 50 cents in the Aprils and up from there on out, even though the Febs were down a little. So we're, I think, finding the low in the hogs after a big move down, and we're looking for a low soon in the cattle.
Anything else add before I let you go from the outside?
Not really. The politics in the livestock is something that just, you know, you never know what's going to happen there.
All right. Thanks much. We appreciate you filling in.
Thank you.
Pete Manhartz with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, filling in today for Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing, who was called away on short notice.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Mike Sola says this afternoon the skies will be cloudy. It'll turn cooler in northern and central sections. Some scattered drizzle, a few flurries in the south, a few showers arriving. Highs today from 33 in northwestern Illinois to 50 in the south tonight in Illinois, partly to mostly cloudy in Indiana, mostly cloudy. Some occasional snow showers or light snow, mainly in the east. The lows this evening, says Mike, from 20 in far northern Illinois to 32 in the southern parts of Illinois. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny early, increasing cloudiness during the afternoon. Highs tomorrow from 37 in northeastern Indiana to 52 in southern Illinois. The extended forecast on Wednesday for mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers, a little bit of light rain, possibly mixed with snow in the north. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a complete look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL.
In agricultural news, Washington Insider is reporting today that the House will pass in early February a revised version of a bill calling for $39.7 billion in mandatory spending cuts, including $2.7 billion for agriculture. Of that, $1.45 billion amounts to shifting of direct ag payments from FY 2006 to a later date. Meanwhile, Ag Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte is predicting Congress will pass an ag disaster aid package when lawmakers get back to work next month.
I would predict that there will be. We're working very closely with Senator Cochran, who's the chairman of the Senate Senate Appropriations Committee, used to be chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. His region of the country, of course, was the hardest hit by Hurricane Katrina and then Hurricane Rita. We are aware of problems that have occurred in other parts of the country as well. This is not unusual. We always encourage folks to get crop insurance and to do other things to manage that risk. But nonetheless, when people are hurting, the Congress usually responds, and we're looking to try to find some ways to do that, even with the tight budget.
Regarding the FY 2007 budget, President Bush is expected to deliver that to Congress the second week of February. Arkansas Senator Blanche Lincoln says she's hearing the president will once again propose a smaller farm payment limit.
It is a clear indication that this administration does not want to work with the agricultural community. They are limited in their scope of what agricultural production is in this country, and they're also very, very, very limited in the need for government to play as a partner with agricultural producers in the global community and in the global economy. So the idea that they're going to toy around with something like this shouldn't come as a surprise to us, because they have tried to hit us at absolutely every turn and every corner on this.
But Goodlatte says there will not be wholesale changes to the 2002 Farm Bill through budget reconciliation.
Farmers and ranchers are always prepared to do their share, and they know that the times are tight with regard to the federal budget. However, whatever we look at that the administration may send to us has to be in the context of the commitment that I've made. I know Senator Chambliss, chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, has made to keep this farm bill intact, and that if we are looking at proposals that would dramatically change how it operates, we would say save those until we write a new farm bill.
Meanwhile, global trade talks on agriculture appear deadlocked as trade ministers at the World Economic Summit in Switzerland concentrated on setting timetables for more meetings than the sticky issue of tariffs and subsidies. Little seems to have changed since a December meeting in Hong Kong, where WTO members could not agree on formulas to liberalize ag trade. But trade ministers in Switzerland say there is new resolve to get something done. With world trade talks stalled at least for the moment, the U.S. continues to work on bilateral trade deals, but the ranking Democrat on the Senate committee charged with overseeing U.S. trade policy says those treaties won't do much for America. Smitha Clokey reports.
At a Washington luncheon, Senator Max Baucus laid out what he calls the facts of life, saying Americans won't be able to compete on a global front without a greater emphasis on math and science. The Montana lawmaker credits growth in India and China to their school's focus on fundamentals. But Baucus also suggests the White House may be the anchor that's slowing America's global growth.
This administration has pursued politically motivated trade agreements with very small countries of little economic significance that create few jobs here at home.
The top Democrat on the Senate Finance Committee accused the Bush administration of protectionism and putting political motives ahead of national interests. Baucus went on to say government should show unwavering support to businesses interested in global trade.
When American companies embrace these new market opportunities, we must also send them a clear signal. The American government has their back.
Baucus says he will launch 7 legislative proposals this year to address other national concerns, including energy and international trade. In Washington, I'm Smita Clokey.
India officials stressed time is running out, with a self-imposed deadline for reaching a world trade deal of April 30th looming. Trade ministers from the U.S., the EU, India, Japan, Brazil, and Australia will likely meet in late February or early March. A key USDA official says the agency has not determined whether it has the legal authority necessary to institute a mandatory livestock ID system. The issue is whether USDA can require ranchers to report to a private instead of a government system. USDA officials are working on the assumption that the program will be self-policing rather than require inspection and enforcement by the government. Meanwhile, USDA officials are saying the agency will enter into relationships with numerous private animal tracking databases as long as they meet basic standards. And the journal Science is concluding that studies used by ethanol opponents that there is a net energy loss in production are scientifically inaccurate. The report from the Energy and Resource Group from Cal Berkeley points out that net energy loss studies do not consider the role ethanol co-products such as dry distillers grains, corn gluten feed, and corn oil play in net energy balance formulas. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, this year, the RMA, the USDA's Risk Management Agency, will allow 9 crop insurance companies to offer products at a reduced premium. We'll tell you when and how those reductions may or may not take place. For this 1 year, and probably not again because Congress did not approve continuing funds for the program, 9 companies will offer crop insurance at a reduced premium. They are Rain and Hail, Farm Bureau Mutual, Farmers Crop Insurance Alliance, NAU Country Insurance, Crop One Insurance Direct, Rural Community Insurance Services, Agro National, John Deere Risk Protection, and Heartland Crop Insurance. Not all of them operate in every state. The crop insurance premium reduction plan will allow those companies to offer RMA plans at a discount. Maybe, says University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Gary Schnittke.
A number of companies have applied to offer premium reductions, but they won't know what those premium reductions are until after the 2006 year, because RMA is requiring is them to show that they have had lower costs such that they can reduce premiums and safeguard their profits. So there, some companies may offer premium reductions. We don't know the amount of those premium reductions, and we won't know if any particular company is offering until after the or will have one until after the year is over.
So Schnittke says it isn't likely the discounted price will be refunded to farmers until 2007, and maybe as late as 2008, depending on the paperwork and how fast the company and RMA move to calculate the premium reduction.
Yeah, there are a limit to the amount of premium reductions. I would put that limit at about 10% of what the premium is, and the premium reductions would likely be much lower than that. So you can judge. I have no particular feel for the probability of anybody getting this.
Farmers in the Midwest have until March 15 to make federal crop insurance decisions. They can visit the University of Illinois Farm Doc website for help. The site at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu has a crop insurance section with estimated premiums. Those will change to actual full-cost premiums when RMA releases the final crop insurance calculation numbers March 1. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. We're joined now by Wyatt Muse of the Andersons here in Champaign County to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Wyatt.
Afternoon, Todd.
Last week, did farmers take advantage of the higher prices in the corn?
Yes, definitely. Quite a few farmers have been selling some old crop as well as getting some price on the new crop.
And what do you think about the new crop pricing? Have they moved along to a 5 or 10% level or longer than that?
A few people have sold more than that, and some people are right in that range.
And your hopes for the next week as you take a look at the marketplace, what do you see happening as we're toying with levels in both the soybeans and the corn at the Board of Trade that seem to be fairly important technical signs?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the technical guys really want to drive these beans up higher. I've had a couple guys talk about that these beans, you know, still have a good amount of upside left in them, and the corn could be a follower on that, but probably not as strong as what we could hope for.
You're hearing what from Argentina about the weather forecast there?
Much drier in South America, and I'm kind of afraid of listening to that forecast because that's the same thing that was happening around here last summer, about a comparable point in the growing season. So I'm sure it is dry down there, but at the same time, we could be very surprised once the crop comes in.
Oh, I hadn't really thought about that, but it is an interesting point. Awfully dry here in the Midwest, especially in Illinois last summer, and we still managed to raise a fairly good crop. And I know that portions of Brazil are in awfully good shape this year.
Yes, they had a lot of good soil moisture going into the season, a lot of good rains up until about the last week and a half. So they are at a dry point now, but they still have a lot of subsoil to work off of.
And your bids for the day are?
213 cash corn, 238 fall, 589 cash beans, and 615 fall.
Wyatt, thanks much.
Thank you.
Wyatt Muse is with the Andersons here in Champaign County. Joined us this afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with the folks in the Chicago office of Chesapeake Energy about the agricultural weather. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Governor Blagojevich and several Democratic state lawmakers are proposing legislation to enhance safety in Illinois coal mines. The proposal comes in response to the two disasters that killed 14 West Virginia coal miners earlier this month. The legislation would require all miners in Illinois to wear emergency oxygen gear and require mine operators in the state to install wireless communications devices underground. A mining industry lobbyist says the proposals are generally reasonable, but questions remain about how some changes would be implemented. Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan wants lawmakers to pass legislation that's designed to help homeowners who are struggling to pay their mortgages. Madigan's proposal seeks to impose rules on companies that offer to help property owners, but either do nothing or sell their homes to a third party. In Indianapolis, a state lawmaker wants the Indiana General Assembly to put the brakes on Governor Daniels' sweeping highway plan. Democratic State Representative Dave Crook says public hearings should be held on the plan, including its proposal to lease the Indiana Toll Road to a foreign consortium for 75 years. The Clinton Nuclear Power Station is offline for its biennial refueling and maintenance. Its owner, Amergen, says workers shut the plant down last night in advance of inspections and maintenance activities that can't take place with the plant in full power. Those workers expect to replace half of the Clinton reactor's fuel. No word on when the plant is expected to come back online. Testimony has been canceled today and tomorrow in the racketeering and fraud trial of former Illinois Governor George Ryan. No witnesses have taken the stand in the trial since Wednesday, and jurors are getting an extended break because the prosecution's last major witness has taken an emergency personal leave. Chicago Symphony Orchestra music director Daniel Barenboim is out of the hospital and plans to set off for a U.S. tour as planned later this week. The 63-year-old conductor sought treatment after experiencing problems with his sense of balance, but he was released yesterday after doctors found nothing seriously wrong with him. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580, your agricultural information advantage. Meteorologist Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, is on the line to tell us all about the agricultural weather across the globe. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start in South America this afternoon. It seems to me that apparently there was some debate and may continue to be some debate about whether Argentina is going to get 4 inches of rain or no inches of rain over the near term. And that ensued in Chicago and had some impact on the Chicago Board of Trade. Where do you stand?
Well, we believe here at Chesapeake Energy that Argentina is going to get really good rains here starting this week and actually continuing on into next week. The reason for the increase in rainfall is really because the jet stream pattern across South America is undergoing some changes, at least with what compared to what it's had here over the past week to 10 days. And, you know, for the past week to 10 days, they've been relatively dry and temperatures have been warming up and, in fact, now have turned hot. And the reason that they've turned hot is because of a ridge of high pressure that's developed across Chile and is now moderately strong, and that is at least impacting Argentina, producing this current stretch of moderate heat that they're in. As we go through this week, the ridge of high pressure will be weakening and actually be slightly retrograding out into the Pacific, and that flattens out the flow across Argentina. And as a result here, we will see scattered thunderstorms developing, really starting tomorrow, continue on to Wednesday before the activity turns more widespread later on this week. And so, you know, the pattern here looks actually somewhat similar to what we saw back a few weeks ago, where Argentina was initially dry and had their stretch of heat before then big rains developed across the region. And this setup is quite similar to that. Not exactly the same, but certainly enough to warrant a significant rain event for them.
In the growing areas of Argentina and the growing areas of Brazil, fairly spread apart. Is there much of a change in those northern areas in Brazil and how they might receive rainfall?
Yeah, well, we are seeing an increase in rainfall across the northern areas of Brazil, especially in the states of Goiás and Minas Gerais and the eastern portion of Mato Grosso do Sul. Some of those areas haven't received much rain here over the past couple of weeks, but with this kind of wetter environment down across Argentina, and actually southern Brazil now going dry for a week, that increases your rainfall potential across the northern areas of Brazil. So some of these areas that haven't gotten much rain here lately, it looks like they will be finally seeing some relief here as we go through this week and even on into the next week as well.
Tell me about weekend rainfall in the Midwest and how it fell across the nation in some of the drier areas?
Well, certainly across the Midwest, this was the biggest precip event in a long time across the region. We saw numerous reports up to 1.5, even 2 inches of precip across parts of eastern Iowa, northern Illinois. This is something that we haven't seen in a while here, so it certainly helped to make up some of these long-term rainfall deficits here across the Midwest. The one area, though, that kind of missed out, at least with the heavy precip, was parts of the southern plains, but that's actually at least what was expected, as the system wasn't able to tap into good Gulf of Mexico moisture until it moved into the eastern plains and the Midwest and the Delta. But certainly this system here was enough to make up some of the long-term deficits, and at least we see more systems here on the way for the Midwest as well as portions of the plains as well. It's still, for the central U.S., the driest area at this time is this area of the southern plains, including Oklahoma and Texas. It got a little bit here over the weekend, but not much on tap is here on the way as we go into the early portion of February. And so that looks to be the driest spot in the central U.S. and will continue to be the driest spot as we go through the first half of Feb.
And when you say the driest spot, I assume you mean extraordinarily dry. If you look at the drought monitors, I think they're into the deep blood reds now as to how dry they really are. And
well, you know, when you're blood red, you know you're pretty darn dry.
Yeah, they're two shades of red too deep, I think. So it's not a pretty area. Tell me about the cold areas that we had suffered in the agricultural world in Russia and parts of Europe.
Yeah, we saw impressive cold. This was about a week ago in portions of the Ukraine and Russia. Low temperatures dropping numerous mornings down to minus 15, minus 20, even minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, which even for some snow-covered areas, that is a possibility of producing some winter kill damage. So based on the longevity of the cold, the intensity of the cold here across those areas, which are mainly the Ukraine, Russia, some parts of eastern Poland, those areas at least had some conditions that would warrant winter kill. And overall, we think that there was some winter kill, and now it's just a matter of assessing the damage, which we're likely not known until the crop comes out of dormancy in the spring.
And then as we let you go today, if you could come back to the area I know you're paid to look at, natural gas supplies in the U.S. and how they're faring for the winter and where they're moving and what the winter has meant for that.
Well, from a supply standpoint, certainly we're at very high levels at this stage of the game, and a lot of that has to do with the ultra-warm January that we've just had, and it's looking like January will go down in the record books, at least from a national standpoint, as the warmest or one of the top two or three warmest Januaries of all time, and records go back, official records go back 111 years, so this ultra-warm here in January, certainly that's caused unusually low heating demand for both natural gas and heating oil. And so from a supply standpoint, we're above the five-year average supplies at this time, and actually above levels were a year ago. Now, I do want to make the point here that at least our warm January, it does look like that's going to be coming to an end here. And we see the jet stream pattern changing across North America, let alone the whole northern hemisphere. And that's going to result in a much colder pattern here, which starts over the upcoming weekend, and it looks like it'll continue throughout a good portion of Feb.
Mark, thanks much. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Reports on Monday afternoons. I'll return in just a moment, and we'll take you through the top of the hour here on WILL AM 580.